Hey everybody, this is Philip McCluskey from the World's Sexiest Diet Program. And here I am today with Elwyn Robinson, nutritionist and herbalist. You can find more information about Elwyn at lionheartherbs.com. And welcome, Elwyn.
Thank you very much, Philip. It's a pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. What we're going to do today is we're doing a little bit of a fireside chat here. And we're talking about today the subject of superfoods. What are superfoods? And do we need to eat them? And how much do we need in our diet? And what kind of benefits do we get from superfoods? So Elwyn and I got together, and Elwyn's the superfood king in my book. Anytime I see him, he always has a large container of mixed herbs and superfoods and tonic teas. And matter of fact, he just brought me over a big old container today. And Elwyn, what's your thoughts on superfoods, and what are superfoods?
Great question. Well, you know, one of the things that I love is every time I speak to a client and I ask them what supplements they're having, because obviously I go through all kind of standard questions, right, in medical history, I ask them what supplements they're having, and they start going, well, maca, camu, you know, goji berries, spirulina. I'm like, wait, they're foods. You know, in fact, not only are they foods, but ideally I would like them to be the basis of your diet. So the idea of seeing them as a supplement, like something you add in as an extra thing, is to me fundamentally faulty. So what's a superfood? I mean, you know, from my perspective, what a superfood is basically most of the foods that we buy these days, you know, from the grocery store, from the supermarket, from, you know, any kind of standard shop, it's basically very, very demineralized. That's the main thing about it. And what demineralized means is that the soil that it grows in is being just way overused, so there's hardly any goodness left in the soil. So then the plants that grow in that soil, they don't have the minerals and they don't have the goodness in the soil, so then they don't grow very well and they're quite weak. And that's why you need pesticides, fertilizers, herbicides, all the kind of things to support them, because otherwise they would naturally die. And they're very, very low in actual nutrition. So to a certain degree, organic things are better. They've got on average twice as much nutrition in. But what's far better than either of those is wild foods, wild foods and wild herbs.
And I've heard people talk about how weak foods can literally make you weak.
Right.
And the idea behind, of course, our forefathers having a much different type of greens, for example, or wild foods, just because of the difference in the soil and compared to then, to maybe 100 years ago, to what it is now.
Absolutely. I mean, even 100 years ago, I read a book by A. True Ott, and it had this brilliant quote in it. It was the US Senate Commission from 1936, and it was talking about how if the soil continued to be as depleted as it was, then we could expect mass health problems, mass congenital and chronic health conditions to proliferate, as an example of it. And since then, nothing's been done about it. So, you know, that's back then, 1936. So just imagine how much more deficient our soil is now.
Wow.
And of course, even if you don't eat a lot of plant foods, even if you eat animal foods, then that's the basis of your diet. Still, they're going to have eaten the plant foods from the soil, which is really, really deficient. So no matter what you eat, you are eating very, very, very deficient food. So what a superfood is fundamentally to me is it's food which has the goodness in. Generally, either because it's grown wild, or because it's grown with little cultivation, or because it's cultivated in an area where the soil is still good, or with a few exceptions, like maybe hemp seeds. Hemp is cultivated, but because its roots go down so deep, it will drag up that nutrition that a standard crop like corn or wheat wouldn't even be able to touch.
Right, so it's actually that has a specific characteristic, but then some of the other things, like, for example, goji berries might not be grown in the same area. For example, I think those are generally in the Himalayas, right? And they're not as exposed to the same type of soil issues that we're having right now.
Absolutely, yeah, they are. And they're grown in a way which is sustainable.
Right.
So, but yeah, so the basic factor is superfoods are foods which tend to be grown wild, so somewhere where the soil actually has nutrients. And then the other thing would be that they just tend to tap into the soil and get the good nutrients out a lot better than another plant in an identical location would be able to. So an example of that I love is Brazil nuts.
Right.
There's an example of a wild food, kind of probably a superfood, I'd class it as a superfood, which everyone's kind of familiar with, or most people probably. And it is a wild food. We've never been able to cultivate the Brazil tree. So every time you choose to buy a Brazil nut, you're kind of voting to save the rainforest because Brazil nuts can only ever grow inside a rainforest context. Now, Brazil nuts are like literally hundreds of times higher in selenium than any other nut. And in fact, even higher in selenium than most other plants that grow in that area. So there's something about the Brazil nut tree, it's like it loves selenium and it taps into the earth and it gets the selenium that none of the other plants get. Now, selenium is like the second most important organ for the thyroid, which we're having like a mass issue with at the moment, as it's been related to cancer. So wherever selenium levels are low, cancer tends to be high, and vice versa. So there's a definite correlation there. So with these kind of things in mind, it's really important to focus on getting your superfoods that are really high in these nutrients.
And it sounds like Brazil nut must be fairly hardy too for us not to be able to properly reproduce this on our own and still remain such a wild type of, in this case, nut.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's because it has that power. When we eat it consistently, it gives us that power, just like you said.
And, of course, that question comes up, where do you get your protein? And, we'll go into that in another recording, but I know Brazil nuts and most types of nuts that we can find that might fall into the superfood category tend to give us a high amount of that.
Absolutely. The only people who need to really worry about protein, and we will cover that in the other interview, but generally they're people who don't eat superfoods.
Yeah.
So when you eat a lot of refined, standard, hybridised foods, you might want to ask for a definition on that in a minute, I think you already know, then we tend to actually need to add protein in.
Sure.
Because we're not getting it because it's, it's refined out.
Right.
But if you're eating like even a goji berry, something like 16% protein.
Yeah.
And it's got all the essential amino acids, all the ones that your body can't make itself.
And I always think about the time when I was 400 pounds and I was eating lots of fast food. Mm-hmm. I remember going to a fast food place, picking up a hamburger and, even a massive size one, and feeling to myself, okay, I just ate that hamburger, maybe ate some fries as well. And then an hour later, I'd be hungry again. And then realizing later on down the game, well, I was eating a lot of empty calories and food that just didn't have anything to it. My body was like, okay, you're giving me something. What's this? It eats it. And then it starts to break it down and says, cool, thank you, but you actually didn't give me anything that I really needed.
Right.
Which is kind of why I've always had the pull towards superfood, because when I tend to eat superfoods, I tend to be satisfied.
Yeah.
Because it feels like I'm getting what my body's really asking for. And it's that wild or hearty organic type of thing that's bringing me, in this case, a large range of amino acids or something that my body might be calling out for. Or maybe if it's a green or an herb or something along those lines, some nutrients or maybe some seaweed would be giving me some minerals or things that's going to be beneficial to my body. And I always feel more satiated after eating when I've included some superfoods in my diet.
That's such a great point, isn't it? Because most people who overeat think that they overeat because they have psychological issues or whatever, because that's what they've been told, right? But in reality, I think a big component of the reason why a lot of people overeat is because their food is genuinely not satisfying. Mm. It's not hitting the spot. It's not providing them what they need. So it's not that there's something wrong with you if you keep eating and eating and eating. It's the fact there's something right with you almost. There's a part of you that realizes it needs something. Because, obviously you don't need to become an expert in nutrition, but just know that, there are almost 100 essential nutrients that you need. And if you're lacking in any one of them, that can cause severe health problems, potentially. So if you are lacking in, 20, 30 or more of them, as a lot of people are, no wonder there's a part of you that's like, I need to consume, because you need to get those into you.
I always used to think of it as like, literally, that I was just eating tasty cardboard. It was something that just didn't have anything of value to me, but it just happened to taste good, and you could put ketchup and mustard on it or something like that, and it seemed fun, and the ketchup was sugar, which probably fed some candida issue or something like that. So it's like, wow, this is yummy, great. But in the end, never had any more energy in the gym, never had any more energy or inspiration to go work out or feel really satisfied in the end.
A definition that I love of superfoods is that it's the exact opposite of empty calories.
Yeah.
So empty calories, it's all calories, no real nutrition. And I'll explain what I mean by that. No minerals, no vitamins, no phytonutrients, no real water as well, living water, that's something that's normally extracted out of it. No enzymes, or very little at least, So what we get with superfoods is we get lots of those. We get lots of minerals, lots of vitamins, lots of enzymes, lots of living water, lots of amino acids, lots of phytonutrients, and not that many calories. Right. That's actually the right way round. Because, you know, so many studies have shown that one of the best things to extend lifespan is to reduce calories.
Sure.
And people look at that and they're like, oh, but, you know, I really need to eat and I love eating and, you know, I can't stop myself eating. And that's understandable, like we say. So that's the amazing benefit about superfoods, as you know, Philip, right, because you made it work, which is that you don't need a lot of them because they're nutrient dense.
Right.
Which means the ratio to nutrition, all the ones I mentioned, versus calories is high.
Right. And, you know, when I think of some of my friends that are the most fit and the most in shape, that are interested in raw foods and creating a really healthy lifestyle, they all incorporate superfoods into their diet. I mean, friends that have been doing raw for 3-4 years that are just, I mean, physically ripped from head to toe. And when I looked at what they were eating one day, one of my buddies was just making a superfood blend and just throwing a bunch of stuff in the blender and kind of making sort of a pudding out of it, and a really, really thick pudding. And I was like, oh, what's that? And he's just like, well, I only need a little, and therefore he's not having tons of calories, but it's such dense, amazing nutrients in everything that his body needs in there. He's having this complete protein, he's eating this, enjoying it, but in essence, it's actually a small meal, and kept him going throughout the day, through workouts, the whole thing. And that's kind of what got really like that superfood mentality in my mind when I really thought about, wow, you can get more in by eating less.
Yeah, absolutely.
And before, of course, in my previous diet, I was eating more and getting hardly nothing.
Yeah.
You know, my body was just not assimilating any of it because there was nothing really to assimilate, I guess. But superfoods, let's play a game. I mean, we don't have anything written down. Let's just see how many we can go through and list. I mean, I know goji berries is a superfood, and that's really popular on the scene.
Love it.
A lot of people say blueberries are a superfood.
I'd say it depends. Wild blueberries definitely
some
are,
wild
right?
Blueberries, right.
But the ones you get in the store are quite often hybridized.
Right.
Hybridized basically means that they've been selectively bred for decades, centuries, sometimes even millennia, to exhibit certain characteristics.
Right.
So generally, if you've ever tried to eat wild foods, like in this country where we're recording at the moment, in England, you have like dandelion, nettle, stuff like that, you might notice it's really, really powerful. But so powerful, it's quite overwhelming.
Sure.
You know, the alkaloids in it, which are like the medicinal element of the plant, can be quite strong and overpowering, especially if you only have like a few things available. So what we as clever humans did over the centuries and millennia is we'd like take cuttings, which is where you take a small part off a plant of the plant that you particularly liked in order to make a lot more of those kind of plants. So we selectively bred plants in order to exhibit characteristics that we liked. And what we basically liked is more and more sugar and less medicine.
Yeah.
Right? So with wild blueberries, they still got some medicine in, and the sugar isn't too high. But the problem with the sort of blueberries you often get in the store, especially the non-organic ones, is that the sugar's got higher and higher and higher, and the medicine has got lower and lower.
That's true. You know, I remember picking some wild ones literally with my mouth off, off the tree in North Carolina, and they weren't as sweet as I was used to.
Right.
And I thought to myself, well, that's kind of interesting. The ones in the store, you know, you just want to gorge yourself on until you can't move. But the ones out in wild, I mean, it felt really just pristine and perfect to be eating them like that. But at the same time, I did think to myself, interesting, they're not as sweet. And I know we say that about apples, too. They said apples originally weren't as sweet.
Mm.
And now we've sort of bred them to be like these delicious, yummy, tasty things. And it always wasn't like that.
In the case of the banana, right? I mean, I think it's the most bought fruit in the world at the moment. But 200 years ago, what we now call the modern banana was green, rock hard, not that sweet, and really had to cook it in order to eat it.
Mm.
And then, you know, some genetic miracle came up, some yellow, sweet, tasty banana, and we were like, whoa, excellent, let's take a lot of cuttings off that. And before you know it, now the whole world's kind of overtaken with them.
Yeah.
But really, they're an aberration. They're not natural. And the fact that they don't have seeds, this is one of the great ways to, just as a, if you don't remember like the specific superfoods we're going to list, just as a general rule, if a plant hasn't got any seeds, like a banana hasn't got any seeds, or some watermelons or grapes or whatever, then it's bound to be very hybridized. And it's the exact opposite of a superfood, right?
Right. So it's, I remember once hearing a friend talk about that and say, you know, seedless fruits can kind of make you sterile in a sense, right? And it's interesting because I don't know, I think maybe I had a plantain once that had seeds in it, but besides that, I've never seen a banana with seeds in it.
There's an Indian grocer down the road for me, and they sell like really little bananas. And they've actually got little black seeds in them.
Wow.
So they do still exist.
Fantastic. So we have goji berries, we have wild blueberries. Now, is mulberries in that category?
Definitely. Mulberries are very special. They're very high in lots of beneficial phytonutrients. But the main thing about them, which is so interesting, is they're the most genetically complex organism in the world. A hell of a lot more so than human beings. So there's something very special about them. They've also got some very interesting alkaloids in them, which are like plant chemicals. So I definitely include those personally.
Yeah, I've had some of them dehydrated, and I remember the first time I had them fresh, I was in Ojai, California, and I was at a local farmer's market, and they had two different kinds. They had a darker purpler color, and then the light beige one, and they were just so long and incredibly tasty. I just remember feeling so refreshed after having them, and felt like I had a really special treat to have them fresh like that. So mulberries, I'm definitely a fan of.
They contain a chemical substance which is not a million miles away from THC, interestingly.
Interesting. So that's why I felt so good.
Maybe you're getting a little bit of a high off them.
any other berries or fruits that we can think of that might be in that category?
I quite like amla berries, camu berries.
Camu, yeah.
Normally, amla, camu berry, you only get in the form of powder, although obviously if you're local to where they grow, I think amla is India and camu is South America, then you would be able to get them fresh, but those two are very well known for having incredibly high levels of vitamin C.
Right.
And in the form that your body recognises as food because it comes with all the right bioflavonoids and phytochemicals which make vitamin C work better. So they work a lot better than a pill because they're natural.
Right.
They'll stay in the blood for, say, 12 hours, while a synthetic vitamin C pill will only stay in the blood for 3 or 4 hours. So it's provable that they're definitely better. I really like Inca berries as well.
Inca berries are nice. Those are really sour, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Those
yeah.
are fantastic. Kind of lemony. Feels like you're having Sour Patch Kids if you ever had those candies in the movie theater growing up. Those are really nice. And then lucuma is a fruit, right? That's been that we use as a sweetener?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not sure that's quite as nutrient dense as the others, but still a hell of a lot better than most of the sweeteners that people use, definitely.
That might be a nice sweetener option for those of you that are looking to have some low glycemic choices. I tend to like to use that in smoothies, kind of gives it a bit of a sweeter, creamy taste, and used a lot in raw desserts as well.
And I'll add to that mesquite and carob.
Yes.
They're actually technically seed pods, but again, you normally buy them as a powder. Although carob, you can definitely get whole as well, when it is kind of, as a friend of mine, Shazzy, said recently, like nature's first chocolate bar. So you kind of break it open, it actually looks kind of sugary and crystalline inside, and you can just kind of eat it. But yeah, carob and mesquite powder are very, very high in minerals. Carob powder, carob, the plant especially. But first of all, they're both wild, so yeah. They're trees that grow wild. Carob's really, really high in calcium. So anyone who's worried about, you know, not eating dairy or, you know, not eating animal foods and is worried about where they're going to get the calcium, first of all, it's not really a real issue. But, you know, if it's something that you're worried about, just eat carob and you know you've got more calcium than you ever did from dairy.
One of the great things I love about carob is it's a fantastic chocolate substitute. And we'll talk about cacao as a superfood in a minute. But for those of you that are having some sensitivities with any kind of caffeinated type products or theobromine or something like that, carob's a fantastic choice, and there's lots of different ways that you can create fun recipes with it. Carob's been used for thousands of years by ancient Egypt and even before that. Again, often used as a little bit of a sweetener as well. I know in areas like Cyprus, it's kind of referred to as black gold, and it's really big there. But carob, yeah, you can find that. And one of the things that's interesting about it is it comes from the pea family, and you're actually, when you get the powder, it's actually the grated pod. It's not so much the seeds, but it's rather the pod on the outside. We find a lot of carob powder, and it's definitely come onto the dessert market a bit more. But you can even find some that's raw now, and that's also available, and that might be a nice substitute as well. Tell us about cacao. There's a lot of talk. What is cacao, and how is that chocolate, and how is that as a superfood?
Well, cacao kind of looks like a nut when you actually look at it. It looks just like an almond, in fact. And it basically grows inside a fairly large fruit. And it grows in South America originally, though a lot of what we actually eat as chocolate now is actually grown in Africa. So cacao is one of the best, most powerful superfoods in the world for a lot of people. You know, it's got MAO inhibitors, it's got PEA, which is very similar to the love chemical. It's got a substance called anandamide, which is a bliss chemical. It's got very high levels of magnesium, iron, chromium, all these kind of minerals that we need and which we're low on. So there's a hell of a lot of good things to say about it. And compared to what most people eat, it's, you know, literally, if you look at a standard diet, then chocolate is probably going to be one of the healthiest things that they actually eat in there. Even though most people eat it along with dairy and along with sugar, it's still probably one of the healthiest things that they eat. But it is still a stimulant. It contains a stimulant called theobromine, right? Mm-hmm. And theobromine is one of the three stimulants that's found in coffee. So coffee has got caffeine, theobromine, and theophylline. So that's why decaffeinated coffee still kind of gives you a buzz if you're not used to stimulants, because of the theobromine mainly. So theobromine is a vasodilator and a cardiac stimulant. So basically it makes the heart go faster and it expands the capillaries as well. So it gives you a kind of flush. From a Taoist, if I can, is it, it's okay to step into the world of kind of energies for a moment?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say it very much stimulates the heart, and it stimulates kind of the fire inside you. So that can be very good for someone who tends to have a lack of fire. So someone who tends to be kind of a little bit low in energy and kind of lost, and you know, the sort of person who hasn't got a lot of drive, the sort of person who maybe feels like quite closed off from the world, not connected, stuff like that. It can be really good. If you're the sort of person who really feels quite connected to the world, however, and you have lots of kind of fire and drive and passion and all the rest of it, it can be overstimulating. It can create too much fire inside you. And the way you can tell that on a psychological level is that people can get quite arrogant or kind of impatient and frustrated and those sort of qualities. On a physiological level, maybe they can develop heat issues like rashes or dry skin, itching, that kind of thing. So those are like a sign that you've got a little bit too much fire going on in your system. So that's the only thing I'd say to be careful with chocolate. But generally, it's like a really great idea. But if you're a sort of person who's easily overstimulated, then it may well overstimulate you.
Cool. Well, that sounds fantastic. I know I enjoy chocolate, and I enjoy switching it up too, and enjoy having carob instead, and just easing out of that every once in a while, and just taking a lot of time to listen to my body and listen to my intuition and see what's right. You know, sometimes I've had a little bit of chocolate in my smoothie every day for 6 months, and then all of a sudden on the day after 6 months, all of a sudden it just doesn't feel right. Right. And then I'm like, my body's telling me, cool, we're done, we're topped up. Now I can let it be for a while and just move on to whatever the next thing that I happen to be present to. So I definitely appreciate it, but I appreciate taking time from it as well. And I think it's all part of just staying in the flow and listening to your body and coming to appreciate what your real desires and wants are, or what the body's kind of crying out for, in a sense.
I totally agree with that. And all science aside, basically, it's a medicinal food. So what that means is sometimes it's appropriate, sometimes it's not. Right. Mm. So medicines are sometimes wonderful. They can be wonderful for a whole 6 months, like you say, but they're not going to be wonderful every day for the rest of your life.
Right.
One more thing I'll just add to the thing with chocolate quickly is that originally it was used as a potentiator, which is a way to get other herbs in there. So that's why it's so wonderful to mix it, like you were just talking about, in like a superfood smoothie of all the other superfoods. Because it basically means that every other superfood that you put in there, like the ones we just talked about and the ones we will talk about, will get into you a lot more easily. They'll get into your bloodstream, they'll get into your cells if you add chocolate. So even if you are kind of feeling like you don't want to have like a lot of chocolate, like a big bar of it or something like that, it might be good to just add a little bit along with all the other wonderful, healthy goodies you're having to make it work better.
Fantastic. Let's go through some of the nuts that are in seeds that might be considered a superfood.
Great.
And then we'll end with any seaweeds or algae. And so we talked about Brazil nut already.
Mm.
And is an almond considered a superfood as well?
I wouldn't consider it a superfood personally. No, I don't know how you feel about it. The only other nut seed that I really put into the superfood category would probably be hemp seed.
Hemp seed.
And chia seed.
And chia. And I know there's some people say pumpkin.
Pumpkin's kind of close.
It's close. Now, it's high in zinc, right? But
it's high in zinc for a vegan food, but you still would need to have a lot of pumpkin seeds to meet your zinc requirements for the day.
Right. So that's kind of one of those things that people tend to talk about, but ultimately we're probably not having enough to make such a difference.
Basically, yes.
Right.
That's what the research shows. So I highly recommend zinc supplementation for most people who are vegan or right. vegetarian. You just don't get enough. And in fact, most carnivores are quite low in zinc as well. But it's pretty much guaranteed if you're a vegan.
Cool. So now, when you say chia, we're talking about the same thing that was used in those little chia pet toys that we used to get when I was a kid, right? And it's literally, it's this thing, right? That how many times in size does it grow when you soak it? Is it like...
I think, you know, it's like 100 times the lignans will swell up to, yeah. It's not like the seed becomes 100 times as big, but yeah, it'll take up 100 times as much space in terms of the mucopolysaccharides it releases.
And I know that I love chia, especially as a superfood, you know, and I use it a couple different ways. I think it's fun to just throw inside of a smoothie. It kind of plumps up a smoothie if you're making a green smoothie or something along those lines. Mm. Or just making it as a bowl. And sometimes I'll combo that with a little bit of cacao, which we talked about earlier. Putting a little bit of cacao powder in with the chia seeds and some water. You could do it with coconut water or hemp milk or whatever you decide to make. Mixing it up, leaving it in the refrigerator for 20 minutes, and it comes out as this most amazing pudding that's pretty potent. You can choose to mix in stuff with it, or you can eat it as is. Tends to be very nice and smooth. And it's a complete protein, is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So is hemp seeds. And the protein from hemp seeds is one of the most easily absorbed and assimilable by the body. So that's why hemp protein is probably like the best source of protein of all, far better than meat.
And for those that have any confusion about hemp or understanding about hemp, when we're talking about hemp, we're not talking about something that has THC. It's a very... It's in the same family, right, as cannabis, but yep. What's the difference, Alan?
Well, the type of cannabis that people actually smoke is hybridized. So in the same way that, you know, we've hybridized the medicine out of most of the foods we eat, we kind of hybridized the THC and the other active compounds into the cannabis. So only something like 3% of cannabis strains that are out there have THC in any kind of level that it could affect anyone even slightly. Naturally, but you know, our tendency as humans to want to kind of get high has meant that we've selectively bred certain types of cannabis so that it has more and more and more THC in it. And in Europe, we call that skunk generally, and I think in the US, you call it chronic. Is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's taking the cannabis in one direction. The other direction is that pretty much every other part of the plant, except for the flowers, and the flowers are what people use to get high from, are actually immensely beneficial for health. I'm really not a fan of smoking the flowers, you know, I think it's detrimental to health, but every other aspect of the plant is healthy, and what's most healthy of all is the seeds. That's because they've got the best quality protein available, they've also got some of the best fats available, right? They've got omega-3, omega-6, you've probably heard of omega-3 at least, you know that it's good for you. Omega-3 is one of those things that we are almost all chronically deficient in, and we're only just starting to realise it. It's also got a very special type of omega-6 fat called GLA, which you find very rarely. It's something that you get in breast milk, and it's very useful essential fat. And then on top of that is all the wonderful minerals that's in there as well. And it's, like I said before, it's way higher in minerals than most food. So hemp seeds are definitely one of my top superfoods. And I guess the last one, the nut, which I didn't think of earlier, is coconut as well.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Coconut. I really love coconut. And I'll just mention again in this context, cacao butter, those two. And I'd say it's especially the butter and the water in the case of coconut, which are beneficial, right? Mm. The whole cream coconut with all that fiber in, like the old brown coconuts, are not as good. Because that fiber isn't that easy to digest. But coconut butter and cacao butter I particularly like to recommend to clients because, again, when we all know the benefits of being vegan, right? At least for a while to kind of lose weight or to cleanse the body or whatever. But one of the problems of being vegan is you tend to run out of saturated fat. And we humans have a real liking for saturated fat, you know, the kind of creamy taste and consistency.
Yeah.
We feel like we can't live without it. And there's a good reason for that. It's really necessary for us to build hormones out of, which are essential for, you know, every aspect of health. And it's every cell needs saturated fat as well. So that's why I'm a really big fan of recommending coconut butter every day to everyone, ideally everyone, and certainly everyone who's on a vegan diet.
And coconut has just so many uses in general. I mean, sure, you can go and you can get the water out of it. Mm. And those of you that might be familiar, generally in a lot of grocery stores, you'll find the brown ones. And those are considered mature coconuts. Those are a bit older. When you crack that open, there'll be a little bit of water, but a really thick, meaty shell inside that you have to kind of scrape really hard with a spoon. Not the easiest to digest. If you get what's considered a young coconut, which you might see every so often in a health food store, or possibly an Asian market, will be a white coconut. And basically what that is the coconut originally is generally a green coconut. They've shaved the husk off of it to make it a little bit lighter for shipping, and then they ship it over here. When you cut those open, you tend to get more water, and the skin tends to be a little bit more jelly-like. Because it hasn't hardened yet, and you can scrape that out and you can do a bunch of things with that. Sometimes we'll take the meat and we'll put it on a salad and cut it up in strips, or we'll make a recipe or a dessert out of it. You can whip it up and add apple cider vinegar, and you can make a sour cream. You can make ice cream out of it. It has tons of different uses. And of course, the water is amazing. I mean, stories I've read say that it's very close to blood plasma, and it was even used in transfusions during the war, is when they were starting to run out of different things, and that's how powerful and this coconuts are, and how well our body kind of just really gets along with it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a miraculous plant.
Cool. So we have coconuts, and what about algaes? What about seaweeds? I know one of the things that I love is spirulina. Mm. And you know, they say that's 60% protein, more protein pound for pound than meat is, and you know, generally I'm not going to eat a pound of spirulina, but it's just kind of interesting to see those numbers on something that we might tend to overlook.
Right, and you know, protein is just the tip of the iceberg. Like you say, I mean, 60% protein, that's way more than meat or fish.
Right.
Even, you know, beef, chicken, all those kind of things, they tend to be like 25 grams per 100 grams. You know, so spirulina, 60s, often 65, so it's more than twice as much. Very impressive. But there's all the other things. I mean, it's so high in minerals. It's so high in pigments like chlorophyll, which is the colour pigment that makes things green, basically, which is a very powerful antioxidant. Antioxidant is anti-inflammatory. It's something that clears away all the free radicals in the body, which basically the things which make you age. So, you know, it's definitely something to look at. Chlorophyll and the green element is kind of what all the things we're about to talk about, the algaes and seaweeds and most of the seaweeds, have in common. So chlorophyll is basically a blood builder. That's one of the main things for it. It's, you know, it's going to give you your iron. It's going to help your body to build hemoglobin. It's also an alkalizer. And we don't have time to talk about what that means, you know, in detail in this program. But suffice it to say, most people are too acidic. And when you have acidity, you have more inflammation, you have more pain, you have more stress, you have more problems. So anything which alkalizes you, anything that reduces your acidity and increases your alkalinity, is highly beneficial for you. And all the green foods do contain chlorophyll, which is probably nature's best alkalizer in the food world. And the algaes, like spirulina and especially chlorella, have way, way, way more chlorophyll than anything else. So, like, you know, if you think of greens, you might think of, say, spinach, right? Or lettuce or something like that. But something like chlorella will have, like, 100 times at least as much chlorophyll. Gram per gram, even as dried spinach or cooked spinach, you know, it's just absolutely astonishing how much chlorophyll is in there. So the same is true of spirulina. Spirulina also has a blue pigment in there, like a lot of a blue pigment, and that's really good for feeding the brain, especially helping the central nervous system to work. It's good thyroid food. It's got loads of benefits. But they are, I would say that the green algaes and the seaweeds are really, from my perspective, the kings of the superfood world, you know? So goji's great, and I eat them every day, but they're kind of like the treats of the superfood world, you know?
Right.
But when you get to, like, your marine phytoplankton, your kelp, you know, your and your spirulina and your chlorella, then you're talking about the king of things. And right. it's true to say that even if you only eat like a couple of tablespoons of these products in your food a day, you're going to get more nutrition in a couple of tablespoons than probably every other piece of food that you eat that day.
Wow.
That's how powerful they are.
And I know I love spirulina either in a smoothie or I actually just sprinkle it on top of my salad and just mix it right in. The salad gets a little bit green. You end up eating it. Your mouth gets a little bit green. It's kind of a funny thing, but it feels really good, and I love the taste. So we have a couple more minutes here. We're going to just wrap up with talking about some of the plant life that's superfoods. And we talked a bit about wild plants before. I know there's a lot of those different types of things that we incorporate into our diet as superfoods. Care to touch on any of that?
Absolutely. So basically, the whole system of what we now call herbalism basically started to exist when we started dividing medicine away from food, because originally they were one and the same thing. So because we started hybridizing food and making like easy calories available, we then had to start adding wild foods into our diet as medicine in order to stop us from getting sick and dying.
Right.
So that's where herbalism's come from. So basically, again, as much as I don't see superfoods as being something that is a supplement, it just should be the basis of your diet. And the ways that we've described, you know, like have seaweed with every meal or at least once a day, have like the top fatty superfoods like coconut or hemp with every meal or at least every day, have kind of the treaty superfoods with every meal or every day. And then on top of all that, I would say as well, actually incorporate herbs into your diet. So I have like a superfood mix that I use myself every day, which I think you tried. You make chocolates out of it, right?
Yeah.
And that's got some carob mesquite as the main ingredients for taste, but that's also got like almost 20 different herbs in there, you know? So it's got like maca and suma and sacajurgon and jatoba and chuchuasi and astragalus and, you know, I won't go on. But basically all of these herbs we can actually grind up and eat in a way that it's actually going to be medicinal for us. So I'm a big fan of having, you know, medicinal teas where you get herbs and brew them up as a tea, which is probably what most people listening to this are more familiar with, you know, like you can make yourself a herbal tea. But don't forget you can actually eat herbs as well. And the line between herbs and wild food is really only in our mind. You know, they're kind of the same thing, at least for tonic herbs. The more medicinal a herb gets, the more that you need to be careful with it and make sure that you don't eat it inappropriately. Something like wormwood, for instance, can be quite liver toxic if you eat too much of it. But all the herbs which come under the category of tonic, like all the ones that I just mentioned, you can have it every day and it's just going to be of immense benefit to you.
And is that what the meaning of tonic is, or is that what the difference is between a tonic and a medicinal herb?
Absolutely. The definition of a tonic herb is that you can have as much as you want for as long as you want, in the same way that you would with food.
Right, so I know some of the teas that you made are tonic teas, so we can continuously be brewing and drinking that throughout the day, helping with immunity or support or what have you, and that's just another way to get in foods that have these really kind of super characteristics, so to speak, and that are going to be beneficial throughout our for our body, but something that we can kind of play with throughout the day and just kind of graze and grab a glass every once in a while or graze with our superfoods, and maybe it's just grab a handful of gojis or some sort of fun mix that you put together or something along those lines.
Absolutely. You know, I'd say the game is, especially if you've done what you did, Phil, you know, where you spent years making yourself deficient, chronically deficient, all these minerals, eating empty calories, like I did too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been there too. The game really needs to be, how can I get as much nutrition into my body whilst eating as little calories as possible, you know? And you're going to do that by having superfoods, you're going to do that by having super herbs that you can eat, like astragalus, that's one that you can eat. There's a lot of herbs that you can't eat though, you know, like Hoshi Wu, for instance, which is like a rock hard piece of root. So in that case, then that's where you brew it up and make a tea out of it.
Right.
And one of the main reasons why people say raw food is a good idea, which is totally right, of course, is that the problem is as soon as you cook something, all the nutrients go out, and in the case of boiling it, for instance, the nutrients go into the water. Well, that's basically why you're making a tonic tea. You're heating it up in water, and all the nutrients, all the goodness, goes out of the solid matter and goes into the water. So if you're eating herbs, eating superfoods, drinking herbs, then you're doing absolutely, and possibly adding supplements as well, like in the case of zinc, where it's quite hard to get it from plant foods, then you're basically giving your body everything that it needs. And then if you still feel hungry, like excessively hungry after doing all that, then you know that your problem's psychological or whatever. But I don't think most people try that, you know. They just assume that there's something wrong with them, like in their head.
Yeah.
In fact, there's probably actually something wrong with them in their cells.
Right.
Which is that their cells are like, oh, please feed me, you know. So start with that.
So I think our major takeaway from this audio session is going to be superfoods is essentially, the idea behind it is less is more.
Yes.
In this case. You get to eat less, you get to feel more energetic, you got long-lasting energy throughout the day, you're getting complete proteins, whether wild or whether you're finding it organic, it might be in your backyard, putting together a mix of super foods, super herbs, creating tonic teas are all going to be no longer just a treat, but can be start to become, you can start to work in incorporating this as a foundation of your normal everyday diet and lifestyle.
Absolutely. I'd say all the stuff that you're eating right now, probably carry on by all means, but it's filler.
Yeah.
You know, it's just there to, it's there to dress up your seaweed, and it's there to dress up your algae. It's there to give it taste and flavor, but I wouldn't base my diet on it.
Right. Don't get caught up too much in the fun stuff and forget about the real meat and potatoes, so to speak. Awesome. So this has been a great chat. I appreciate you, Elwin. And for those that want to find out more information about Elwin, again, check him out at lionheartherbs.com. And talk to you guys soon.
Thanks so much, Phil.